Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. Well, this continues to be very bizarre for me, broadcasting from home, and we're working on it each week, trying to figure out ways to get the quality better. Maybe this week won't be much better than last week, but I did make one alteration, and I have time to make other alterations. Might have to spend a little extra money, but anything for PRN, you know, anything for PRN. So, I got a lot of responses from people who listened to the show last week. Yes, the sound isn't what it should be because we're not in a studio. And yes, as I mentioned, I'm going to be trying to increase the sound quality by all other means that I can from home. We'll see if that's possible. I'm not really sure. You may have also noticed that the music, I'm not sure about the music in the middle of the show, but the theme music is missing some bottom register. It's really odd. It's missing, maybe that has something to do with Skype broadcasting. I don't know. It has something to do with, somebody mentioned this to me, a couple of listeners who wrote me emails about the broadcast, that the music is missing some bottom part, like drums and bass a little bit. What can I do? What can I do? The gods have willed it that way. About 3 weeks ago, there was an article in the paper, which I wrote an essay about on my website and mentioned to my mailing list. But I think it's something that sort of stuck with me, and I'd like to go over it again, like to talk about it a little bit. Here's an article that was in the paper, and I'm sure that you know about this through whatever media you listen to. through whatever device, if you still watch an old-fashioned TV. Does anybody watch TV news anymore? I wonder. I don't know. I think most people get their information from the internet or from some little piece of glass that they're looking at right in front of them. I mentioned last week that you might hear all kinds of extraneous noise here because this is not a soundproof studio. This is my living room where I do what I call living. And as I mentioned, I'm just a few blocks away from a fire department, large hospital, and a police department. And you may hear, I don't know how far a Skype microphone picks up. It's on one, my microphone here is on one wall opposite where the window is, about 18 feet away, the living room window. And I'm in the back of the building, so the sound isn't that amplified. But one thing that can get through all the time is anybody talking outside in the shaft way, and also sirens. There are many sirens because of all the cops and the fire department and the ambulances, the EMT people. So today the windows are open because the weather is better here in New York. It's 50-something degrees. It's not 27. Bizarre, strange weather that we're having. But you may hear some sirens. You may hear more than one siren because they just pass by here all the time. But this issue, anyhow, that I brought up a couple of weeks ago and that you're probably familiar with has to do with ISIS. Are we all sick? Can we see a show of hands here? Are we all sick to death of hearing about ISIS and seeing headlines about ISIS and reading about their latest attack? I mean, are we sick of this already? What can be done? What can be done is what's being done, I suppose. But it's just the most astounding political and military blend that I've ever seen in my life. I paid attention to history, being a sort of a history buff and very interested in politics and current history and ancient history and all sorts of history. I have never seen things change so much in one area as in the last several years in the Middle East. Absolutely astounding. Now we've got the United States fighting alongside Iran against ISIS. Is that because they're Sunnis? I think that's because they're Sunnis. And you've got the you've even got people who ordinarily would help Sunnis going after ISIS. I think the Saudis are. And now I read in the paper, but so here's the United States trying to negotiate a treaty, not with the help of Benjamin Netanyahu, that's for sure. He's trying to negotiate a treaty, as foolish as some people think that may be. He's trying to negotiate a treaty with Iran, which seems to today has fallen through. Yesterday it looked good. Today it doesn't look good. So who knows if it'll ever be concluded. And there's a lot of people who do believe that it doesn't make any difference because you can negotiate all the treaties you want. They could still go ahead and develop a bomb underground someplace. So eventually that's going to be a real problem and maybe not too late in the future. So here we are where Iran is supposedly our big enemy. They're funding Hezbollah, and they're funding, you know, other groups that that are attacking our ally, or is it our former ally, Israel? And yet we're fighting, not really alongside them as allies, but we're fighting right next to them, which can't be good for battle operations against ISIS in northern Iraq. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen. Strangest thing I've ever seen. There's going to be a lot of crazy and unfortunate deaths as a result of this because everybody's got modern weapons and they're going to be like just displayed all over the place and used all over the place. Anyhow, getting back to ISIS. And I always get it confused because it's one of the primary Egyptian gods, goddesses actually. Anyhow, here's the headline. Site of ISIS vandalism ranks among world's most important for archaeologists. News that Islamic State fighters had bulldozed and vandalized the ancient city of Nimrud in northern Iraq provoked outrage on Friday as archaeologists despaired that the militant group was systematically destroying priceless antiquities in a wellspring of civilization, that is to say, that area of the world. Islamic religious scholars, joining common cause with governments, museums and other international preservationists to denounce what they described as an odious affront. Al-Azhar, Sunni Islam's leading religious institution based in Cairo, called the destruction a major crime against the entire world, which it is, in a way, which it is. If you saw some of the pictures, what these people were doing, they recorded everything they're doing. They record themselves chopping off people's heads. They record themselves taking a leak. They record themselves eating a hamburger. They record themselves doing everything. They really want to be TV stars. They want to be famous as much as they want to be powerful and whatever else it is they want. This is yet another attack against the Iraqi people, reminding us that nothing is safe from the cultural cleansing. Remember that phrase, cultural cleansing. Where have we heard that before? Underway in the country, said the official Irina Bokova, who is Director General of UNESCO, the United Nations Organization for Education, Science, and Culture. It targets human lives, minorities, and it's marked by systematic destruction of humanity's ancient heritage. Humanity's ancient heritage. Which it is, again, humanity's ancient heritage, not those people in that area, but humanity's ancient heritage. And why do I say that? Well, I'll explain that later, if I remember to do it. Iraq's Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities confirmed on Thursday that Islamic State militants had used bulldozers and other heavy vehicles to vandalize an important archaeological site at Nimrud, about 18 miles southeast of Mosul, the northern Iraq city seized by the group in June. Nimrud was founded more than 3,300 years ago as a central city of the Assyrian Empire, and today is considered one of the most important archaeological sites in the world. Its remaining statues, frescoes, and other works are widely revered. And here's a quote from Deborah Lair, chairwoman and co-founder of the Antiquities Coalition, which is a Washington-based archaeological advocacy group. Every person on the planet should pause after yesterday's violent attack on humanity's heritage and understand ISIS's intent not only to control the future of humankind, but also to erase and rewrite our past. Does that sound familiar too, for people who have studied history, the recent and going back, let's say, 60, 70 years? And even further, going back to the American West and the Indians in our country, this is something that happens all the time, all over the world. And it happens more often in the last couple of hundred years than it has ever happened before. But maybe, you know, that's just my ignorance of history. Often when some culture or some invading culture or force takes over, and this is throughout history, I guess, so I guess I'm wrong about that, they do attempt sometimes to suppress everything that has to do with a people's culture, including language, including religion, including absolutely everything else, language, dress, the way they live, every single thing, until that culture is completely destroyed, where it doesn't exist anymore, which is maybe one of the great crimes that that any group has committed on any other group. We must unite with global intention to preserve our common heritage and resist ISIS's efforts to steal not only our future freedom, but also our history. The very roots of our civilization, she said in a statement on its website. Well, is it our civilization? I guess. But it's a civilization she's talking about, and it's a history itself she's talking about. The Nimrud destruction came a week after Islamic State militants videotaped themselves marauding through Mosul's museum using sledgehammers and torches to destroy statues, artifacts, and books. They're taking us back to the days, let's see, Islamic State leaders have sought to justify the cultural destruction by asserting that statues and other artifacts violate Islamic prohibitions on idol worship. Oh, please. But religious authorities have called all such destruction barbaric and anti-Islamic. So they don't even have the any kind of imams on their side at all. Archaeologists and antiquities, they may have some fundamentalist nutcases, which exist in all religions. Archaeologists and antiquities experts have also accused the Islamic State, and listen to this, of profiting from many plundered antiquities. Some have said that the looters take small objects they can sell and destroy those that are too heavy to be easily smuggled. Just put that piece of paper over there. So what do we have here? We have who are these people anyhow? what are they doing there? What are they doing there? It's power. It's murder for the sake of it. It's psychopathology. It's gang behavior. How much of this is truly deeply religious? I don't know. And history has always been my favorite subject. I always loved history in school. It was my mother's too, actually. She was a history major in college, and I loved history. History, political science and history were my majors in college. And for instance, I love to read history books. I always read history books. I still read history books, good ones. There's a lot of bad history books, and you got to find yourself a good history book. Anyone by Barbara Tuchman. If you're asking for my advice about history books, there are some great modern history books. I can't think of them right offhand, and I've there's one on the Dulles brothers that came out. I think it was last year or the year before. There are many really good history books, but it's difficult to find somebody who can write history really well. The subject may be interesting, but sometimes the writing just isn't. But I always like history books. I like, and I like historical fiction. I particularly like, some modern fiction, but I love historical fiction. I'm fascinated, absolutely, with the past. And with the idea of time travel, when I was a kid, and maybe, even when I was a little older than a kid, I used to daydream about time travel. And it's not, I'm not the only one, right? I mean, that's always been a big thing, people daydreaming about time travel. I mean, maybe not everybody does this, but the idea that you could take yourself back in some kind of, naturally, of course, you'd be in a protected bubble. You wouldn't be, you'd take yourself back to, let's say the confrontation between, some battle, like the Battle of Gettysburg. Take yourself back to Little Round Top and see how the battle went. Just actually see the actual battle in time. Take yourself back to the time of Christ, let's say, and see what the culture was like. Any time, just pick a time. Dark Ages, what it was like, God forbid, in Europe in the 1930s. In Germany and in France and in Russia, places like that. Take yourself back to the Russian Revolution. Take yourself back to the American Revolution, to the original women's marches for the vote back around the turn of the century, 19th, 20th century. All these things that you could take yourself back to, even if you are young, ancient history might be, maybe you could take yourself back to, I lived through it, so I don't want to go back to it. But I'm talking about going back in time. You know, I lived through the 1968 Democratic Convention, but I realize there were some people who weren't even born then during the Chicago police riot in 1968. So when I talk about a time machine, I'm talking about going back to not necessarily times where there were famous people or famous generals or whatever, prophets or whatever, but going back to a time, sure, you'd like to see that. I mean, if there was a Christ, I would love to go back and see him preach a sermon on the Mount, whatever that. But you might be disappointed, though, right? I mean, it has to be anticlimactic, to use a very, very euphemistic term, to go see what are described in history as, and in religion, as great events, and to go back and see those things. And it might have been not a whole lot to write home about. But anyhow, I always fascinated with the idea of a time machine where you could go back and just see more or less basically what life was like in places like this, what daily life was like. You would see the way the people. And of course, you would understand the language. All in my childhood fantasy, you would understand the language. You would be in a bubble, so you wouldn't be exposed to any germs, or God forbid, breathe any of your modern disgusting germs on these people. And you don't want to alter the course of history. You know, the old theory that if you go back, whatever it is, hundreds of millions of years, and you destroy a butterfly accidentally, or you step on a bug accidentally, there would be no human race. And what a shame that would be. What a shame that would be. We wouldn't have Skype then if the human race was destroyed. But pardon my cynicism. So, but the idea is, of course, so you go back in this bubble and you don't touch them. They don't touch you. You don't alter the course of history. even whatever, taking up the space that you do is not even taking up space. There's some magic to it. And you understand every language that is spoken, wherever it is that you go back to, the Incas, the Aztecs, you know, like I say, revolutionary days, what it was like in New York in 1922, or what it was like in Chicago in the 1920s with Al Capone or something. And so you go back and you just watch this and you see it. And what would you learn from it? I don't know. Obviously, you would know. There, I've seen movies like this with time travel where people go out into the world. They go out of a bubble, and they do things like they go back to the 1920s or the 1930s, let's say, and there's some brand new corporation, some oil corporation, or let's say the National Broadcasting Company is formed, and you know, they buy stock at $3, and then they just go back to the future, and they're automatically billionaires, right? That kind of thing. Now, I would just go back to look at it and see what it was like, and for no other purpose than just to do it, purely academic. And you can't, of course, you'd never be able to write about it, because who could believe you when you have no proof and you have no sources? But H.G. Wells wrote this book, The Time Machine, where he went, I don't think he went to the past, he went into the future. That's what he did. He went into the future. And it's a very disturbing, very strange, of course, kind of clunky book. But it's interesting. He decided to go into the future. I would have no interest if I had a time machine. If I had a time machine from Hasbro or Fisher, or if I ordered one off Amazon, if I had a time machine, I would not go into the future. I do not want to know, not 1 minute later from now, what's going to, well, that's not true. Sometimes I would like to know what's going to happen, you know, tomorrow, the next day, like that. But that really does sort of sap the possibilities out of life. Even though I am often scared of what's going to happen and nervous about what's going to transpire, especially these days when I'm still getting over this gigantic attack on my heart that I had about a year and a half ago. I'm still trying to deal with the shock of it. I really wouldn't want to know anything about what was going to, if anything was going to happen to my kids, bad or good, or anything was going to happen to me or my wife or our lives together. I just don't want to know about it. Life will unfold the way it unfolds, and I will deal with it, I hope, the way that I can deal with it best. But to go back in the past, to go back in the past and see what something was really like, so you would know for yourself. And like I say, you couldn't, you could, I could get on the radio and say, if I had a devotees, like cult devotees, I could get on and I could reveal the truth, brothers and sisters, about what happened at this battle, what happened with this religious figure, what happened here, whose fault was it? You know, some people say, who started this battle? Who started this fight? You know, whose problem was it? Who was plotting against who? I would know, but what difference does it make? Anyhow, ISIS. So what are these statues? So they took sledgehammers and they took, machines, sanding machines, sledgehammers, like bulldozers, and knocked down things that have been standing for 3,000 or more years, or things that have been standing for 2,500 years. But it's just extraordinary to me. Now, maybe some people don't care about that. The level of interest that people have in history varies. It really does vary. I understand that. Some people just don't care. They don't really care if anything happened like the day before yesterday. It doesn't make any difference to them. Whatever's happening now, that's pretty good. Be here now, that's good. But you have to have all of these things in your mind, like a kind of subconscious juggling act that's going on. You have to. But that's the way it seems to me that you would be best balanced, because you are living in a place that is somewhere in this, you can't put your finger on a map, but you're living in a place that is between or parallel. It's happening in a parallel way. I'm not too good at these scientific explanations. But you're living between the past, you're living between the future, and you're living in the present. To paraphrase somebody, if I remember correctly, I heard a quote, what was it, a couple of days ago from someplace, I don't know what it was. It was a quote on some TV show I was watching. Somebody famous said that the present was just the past constantly making itself felt on the current moment. But, you know, it's more complicated than that. And I don't really, I just don't have the kind of intellect or grasp of abstractions to put that kind of thing into words. But you are, in your own life, you know this. You are your past, you are your present, and you are whatever your future is going to be. And that's something. So you can't that's what I didn't get. I didn't get some water for myself. Well, too late. You can't just rule one of them out. You can't pretend you have no history, either personal, or you can't pretend you have your country has no history. The United States is very fond of pretending that it has no history at all of anything bad. We never were a colonial power. We're still not a colonial power. We're not imperialists. We don't go all over the world destroying people's cultures. We didn't commit the mass atrocity that was Vietnam. We didn't even have slavery. They didn't even teach them about slavery in school until I got into this, was a senior in high school. They never even taught a course on it. They didn't even have black teachers when I was going to high school. They had like three black teachers in the entire school, the place where I went, and only one in the history department. And she made a point out of teaching about the history of black people in the United States and slavery. And, you know, she was only there for 1 year. Somehow, mysteriously, she disappeared. But these statues, what are these statues? People don't really, and as far as the American Indians go, really, what American Indians? Did we do that? Nah, we didn't do that. But in fact, what we did with the American Indians is very similar to what ISIS is doing with these statues and what they're trying to do with these cultures where they have power over them right now. The Taliban did this too. The Taliban suppressed absolutely everything that they didn't consider out of whim, but they claimed it was for religious sake. And this happens in a lot of, currently happens in a lot of Islamic countries where the fundamentalists are very powerful or actually running the government or running some area. The Taliban destroyed Buddhist statues that were 1,000 years old or 2,000 years old, statues that had stood there for so long. And what are these statues? These are statues that, in some cases, people took them literally. You know, in those days, they took them literally, but no more. And I'm not even sure if they took them literally, but people sacrificed. They made sacrifices to these statues, some of them pretty gruesome, and in these temples. And, of course, there was this whole, naturally, inevitably, there was this whole sort of gang of priests, this mafia organization of priests at various temples that controlled. They got money, you know, what was Christ so angry about? You know, the money changers in the temple, but that kind of thing. That the priests, the high priests of any group, I'm not going to pick on the Jews, God knows, me being one of them. But, you know, the high priests of any temple, the Egyptians, you name it, any group of people, the priests get in and they tend to run things based on people's fear and superstition. There's nothing new about that. But, so people had sacrifices to these statues, and these statues were considered, stone statues, special places on the earth. You know, these things were in some cases considered holy, and there is something about being in certain places that is holy, that you get a holy feeling. And these statues were considered holy places, but to me, I think that the people back then probably knew that these weren't real gods, that these were statues. These weren't gods that came down to earth and just froze there, these statues that ISIS is sledgehammering and bulldozing and knocking down. These weren't really gods. These were symbols. These were symbols of gods. And they weren't just symbols of gods. They were symbols of, I guess, awe and wonder and mystery and connection to a hidden world. That's what these gods represented. If you read any kind of mythology of any country, ancient mythology, Greek mythology, whatever, Norse mythology, you see that these gods represented natural phenomena. You know, they represented death, they represented dawn, and they represented You know, they represented dusk. They represented the sun and the earth, you know, the one day passing by. They represented greed and corruption and power, and they represented the awesome mystery, really, of nature, the world, of creation itself, of eternity. And as in all ages and all great artists, these things were made into stone or into wood, and they were they became, in a way, their own kind of time machines for modern people. They are time machines too. So for people back in those days who really worshipped at these statues or in these temples, and after all, the same thing goes for, you know, holy books too, you know, like the Quran, the Ark of the Covenant, you know, the Ark where the Torah is kept, the Quran, the Holy Bible, that kind of thing, the sacrosanct places of various religions. All these places are places where people gather, not just out of pure superstition, I think, you know, that's my opinion, but also because there is some joining together of people's sense of holiness, of people's sense of awe, and that's what these statues represent, not to mention the fact that they are sometimes absolute wonders of art, absolute wonders of art. Like any great work of art, these things capture something in the human soul and in the common human soul that everybody feels instantly, even if you're not religious. Even if you're not religious, it captures something that feels eternal and that unites you to other people. And I'm not talking about in museums. And these things they're destroying are in museums. And if you see them in museums, you don't often, like you've been to museums, right? And you've seen ancient statues of Buddha and other ancient statues, and you do get a feeling from them by looking at them. And if you have a lot of imagination, you could project yourself maybe back into the past and feel what these things represent. And even if you don't use your imagination, just based on your feelings, you can get a feeling about what these things meant to the people who made them and what they represent on an ongoing basis to human beings. You know, a statue of Buddha. What is this statue of? It's not just Buddha. It's everything Buddha represented. These statues of these ancient Assyrian gods, these winged gods, they represent something. They represent whatever. It could be bad or good, but paternalism. They represent some essential quality of nature and of humanity and birth and death. But if you've ever gone to a place, and I think maybe many of you have, it doesn't have to be in some foreign country, but that's where the ancient cultures are, except for in American Indian culture, you could find some ancient cultures here. And down in Mexico, right, the Incas and the Aztecs. But I've been to a couple places in my life, not too many. I've been to New Jersey, yes, and I've been to Las Vegas. But I've also, in my life, been a couple of times to Turkey. And when I was in Turkey, my father, who was also fascinated by the past and by history and, you know, by such things, took me to visit ancient Roman sites in Turkey and ancient Greek sites. And we went into old mosques and we went into... And we saw, you know, carvings, and we saw mosaics of a time when Constantinople was a Christian, country, Christian, the capital of a Christian country. And then later on, when it was Islamic, and seeing these beautiful things, these statues, these temples, these carvings in the land where they were made. And knowing that they were made at a certain time and then installed there is absolutely awe-inspiring, absolutely awe-inspiring. And the fact that ISIS is running around knocking these things down, things that have stood for thousands of years, is it good in itself, just by itself, that something has stood for thousands of years? Not necessarily. I mean, but the fact that somebody made art out of a human yearning, out of a common human understanding about the world and about life and death. And they made art out of it. And people gathered there to understand symbolically what they were doing, what they were standing in front of. And just the pure art itself it's just astounding to me. When you start destroying history like that, you're destroying absolutely everything. You're destroying the roots of humanity when you start destroying history like that, in my opinion. If it's Giselle or Jason, let's go to the music here for the middle of the show. This is Mike Feder. Will I ever get used to this? I don't think I will ever get used to this. I just cannot get used to talking, performing, as I mentioned last week. This is a performance as much as it is an essay. If I'm talking about ISIS, I'm talking about statues, if I'm talking about forgiveness, whatever the topic is, if I'm telling a story about my life or mentioning something personal, it is always to me as much as a performance as it is communicating information. And I just can't get used to my living room being the stage. I'm going to try, and I hope I get better at it, but I don't know. I'm maybe too old a dog to learn new tricks. So this thing about ISIS is that they are literally knocking down these statues. That's the ones they can't steal, these hypocritic assholes that they are. They really are astounding hypocrites. It's hard. What are they? They're probably a combination of a bunch of things. They are what they are is just a bunch of thugs. They're like gangsters. They're like a bunch of out of control, carnivorous teenagers that got a lot of weapons. They are, some of them, probably religious fanatics. None of them are truly religious or spiritual in the sense of the word, or else they would understand that it's live and let live, that everybody's got, you know, you don't go around, as we've discovered in something called civilization over the last 1,000 or several hundred years, we don't actually burn people at the stake anymore. We don't actually chop people's heads off, except they do, and except, unfortunately, in some various civilizations and cultures which haven't really caught up to, I wouldn't say the modern world, or God forbid, the European or the white world. I don't mean that. But there are people who really haven't really caught up to the idea that if somebody's got a different God, all right, already, you know, so what? If you don't believe it, and if you think they're going to hell, if you think they're just wrong, even if you think it's shocking what they're saying, you don't cut off somebody's head. You don't knock down and burn down their temple. Leave it alone. If you really believe in your God, if you really believe in your spiritual structure and your way of life and your way of looking at things, then you don't need to destroy somebody else's. Unless, of course, they're trying to destroy yours, like ISIS is. I mean, and there are places in Pakistan and other places where, and was it Myanmar? I forget, where there are blasphemy laws, where they, where people are shot down in the street for uttering blasphemous words. And you're seeing a lot of this with Islamic fundamentalists these days. But there was a time, you know, when it was the Christians, and go way farther enough back, it was the Jews on their march to the Holy Land. You know, if somebody didn't believe in their God, that was the end of them, you know. But that was thousands of years ago. And the Crusades were a long time ago. And burning people at the stake hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Why is it that these people are having so much trouble catching up? Is this politically incorrect? Who cares? It's disgusting. I mean, I read an article in the paper just the other day, and I think you read this too, about some woman who was some adulterous couple who was stoned to death by ISIS in Iran. They're always threatening to stone somebody to death. There was a girl who was killed and burned, or burned alive or something, in Afghanistan because she went against her family's customs and rules. Enough already. It makes you want to grab them. It does want to make you want to grab them by the neck and ask them, you know, can you please look around in the world somehow, you know, and understand that this is not the way, human beings should treat each other? Enough already. I mean, what good does it do you to be burning people and stoning people? I mean, does it help anything? Does anybody love anybody? Where's love in all this? All I see is hatred. Well, anyhow, so they're knocking down these statues, and it's literally, the word iconoclast means literally smashing icons. It just means literally smashing icons, to be iconoclastic. I mean, Abraham in the Bible, the founder of the Jewish, whatever you want to call it, people, the Jewish tribe, the Jewish people, the founder of Judaism in a way, Abraham, this famous, section in the Bible where Abraham goes into a pagan temple and takes a stick and smashes pagan idols. The whole idea in Judaism and in Islam is that you're not supposed to have graven images. You're not supposed to have statues of God. Why is that? Why isn't in almost every other religion, including up until now, you can have statues of God? You can have Christ, and you can have Mary, and you can have Saint this and Saint that. You can have statue. Well, Buddha wasn't God, but you can. In Hindu religion, you could have all kinds of statues, fantastic, interesting statues. But in Judaism and Islam, you cannot have graven images. You can't have pictures of God, or apparently his prophets, as we have found out to our great regret. You cannot have those. You're not allowed to have those. And why is that? I don't know the reason for that. I have not read enough religion or the history of religion to understand that. Although I am going to a class tomorrow on the history of religion. Let me just, I'm communicating with the engineer. One of the reasons I'm having trouble talking is communicating with the engineer by typing on a screen, which is something I know other people have done for years on the radio, but I never get used to it. Get time checks. I want him to give me time checks every couple of minutes. Sorry you have to be dealing with this, but when we get a studio, you won't have to hear this crap anymore, and I won't have to be doing this. So anyhow, Abraham was an iconoclast, and he smashed what he called false images. And Islam, am I allowed to say borrowing? Islam, which absorbed a lot of Judaism in its religion and some Christianity, they came up with the same thing, which is that you can't have an image of God. You can't have a statue of God. You can't have a picture of God. Why is this? I don't know. Maybe it's because God is such an awesome, eternal, impossible to understand, abstract concept. I mean, it's not abstract if you believe in God, I guess. I mean, it's something that's in your heart and soul, I suppose. I don't really have the feeling that way. But if you actually understand that, what it means is that there's a concept of God that is so massive and so vast and so abstract that you can't conceive of it. You can't conceive of the scope and the majesty and the awesomeness of God. So to make an image of it, to reduce God to the size of a statue, to put a face of an animal or face of a human being on it, is to insult God in a way, or is to insult the concept of God as these people believe it, or to draw a picture of God, and I guess in this case of Muslims, his prophet. I suppose you can draw a picture of Moses, but I don't even know if that's true. Maybe not. If you're a fundamentalist Jew, if you're a really super Orthodox Jew, I don't know. But why is that? Well, because it reduces it, because it's an insult to the whole concept and the whole idea of the religion, that it reduces it to human scale or, God forbid, an animal scale. And God is not that small. God includes everything and more than you could even understand. Also, I think it's just a question of competition. When it's like Microsoft or something, when you've got your concept of God and it is so vast and so powerful, you don't want anybody else, showing you there. Nobody else is allowed to have a God. When your God is the God, for instance, Muhammad was a prophet, and he understood there were prophets before him, thousands and thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of prophets before him. But he said that he was the final prophet. He put what was called a seal on prophecy. Muhammad said he was the last prophet. And so by implication, any other prophets that came after him had to be false prophets. So, what is this? It's a kind of competition. When it's like Microsoft, they don't want any competition. They don't want anybody else to have anything. So they buy everything up, or they manage to throw things out or destroy things if they can get away with it. It's like corporate competition. These gods can have no competition. And so all pagan gods have to be destroyed. All pagan religions have to be destroyed. And this is what ISIS is doing. ISIS is acting in this manner, the way that we've read about in ancient history and even in the Bible. Also, this destroying of other people's religion and other people as well who believe in other sects of the same religion, which I could never understand. I mean, if you believe in Allah, if you believe in God, if you believe in Yahweh, and if you believe in this God, whatever your particular God is, then why attack somebody who believes in a different form of the God? The God is still the same God. But there's a certain purity that ISIS is displaying here, a certain insane purity of belief that you saw with the Nazis. You saw with book burning, and you saw with, and you've seen it with the Soviets. You've seen it with degenerate art. The Nazis had something they called degenerate art. And the Soviets had degenerate art. You can't, you can't create anything that isn't approved by the system or the Führer or the leader or what was dictated in some little red book. Whatever they said, and it just shows you that people are at heart, even if they say that they're atheists or seculars, at heart, people have something in common, which is a kind of a childish need. And, some people have grown out of it. A lot of people have grown out of it. Thank God. Use a certain phrase. A lot of people have grown out of it. But some people have this childish need to believe, Freud wrote about this in Civilization and Its Discontents, they have a childish need to believe in a great, awesome mother and father, a leader, der Führer, God, the prophet, whatever it is. They have to have a leader. And sometimes it's good to have a leader. And sometimes iconoclastic behavior is great. When something gets too old or too rigid or controls things too much, it's good to have people go around smashing these idols, these idols of belief that once people believed in this country that there should be slaves, once people believed that women should not vote as a matter of course, once people believed this, they believed that, they believed in a million things, they believed that women should stay home and never go to work, that gays shouldn't even exist, and certainly they shouldn't show themselves, or they shouldn't act as if they were alive at all. They should hide in a closet. So to smash these icons, and sometimes smashing was required, sometimes you had to have revolutions and wars over this, to be iconoclastic can be a very good thing. In fact, it almost has to an American's ear, to be iconoclastic, to be an iconoclast, or certainly to a left-wing person's ear, you know, not to a conservative's ear, but to a left-wing person's ear, it's something that's a good thing, that you break old traditions. I mean, being a child of the 60s, it was nothing but iconoclasm. I mean, you just knocked down the old ways. And sometimes you didn't even pay attention to whether they were good or bad. Just the old ways were just bad. And in a scattershot way, a lot of them could do with some throwing out. And that's why you have sometimes great heroes. Martin Luther King was considered a revolutionary, an iconoclast, right? That kind of thing. But this idea that these statues have to be destroyed is such an old idea. And they're not destroying, ISIS is not destroying these statues to get rid of something old and repressive. I mean, nobody believes in the Assyrian god of, you know, winged, whatever it is anymore. People don't believe in these gods. I mean, they are our time machines. They are our way that we get into touch with history. This is what we have. And to destroy the past is crazy. If you destroy the past in your own life, or you destroy the past in civilization, you're destroying absolutely everything that roots humanity into the world and into the scheme of eternity. If you have no history, you are in a rootless, chaotic place. If you don't know where you've come from, how can you know where you're going? And how can you know where you are even right now? How could you possibly know? You have to be anchored in time. And these old statues and things are our anchors. The only people who believe these statues are real are the people who are destroying them. All right, I think that wraps it up for this week.
Walk through the garden, you better watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he'll save your soul. You gotta keep the devil down in the hole. Got the fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be saved from Satan when the thunder rolls. You gotta keep the devil. by Jesus' mighty sword, and they seal you with their wings. Keep your cross to the Lord. Don't pay heed to temptation, or your hands are so cold. You gotta keep the devil